Hi, everybody. My name is Melissa Campanelli, and I'm Editor-in-Chief of Retail Online Integration, and I'm pleased to welcome you to today's live ROI webinar, 5 Email Marketing Trends You Don't Want to Miss in 2013. Email is the perfect tool for connecting with your customers and prospects, but the power of email marketing is so well known that people's inboxes are overflowing. Your messages have to be extremely well-targeted and relevant to keep them from getting lost. Creating an email marketing strategy with the right message at the right time is a top priority for 2013. Join us in this lively webinar with the founder of Wilson & Ellis Consulting, and Susan Wall, the VP of Marketing of Bronto, to learn why in 2013 email experience will be cross-channel, behavior modeling will be used more often to target buyers at the right moment with the right offer, marketing becomes more automated, data from e-commerce platforms will be used to a greater degree, and retailers must get on board with the banded cart messages. Thank you very much to our sponsor, Bronto, as well, for this webinar. Before we get started, let me point out a few quick tips on how to make the most of today's live webinar. First, if you have any technical difficulties, troubleshoot by clicking on the help widget at the bottom of the console marked with a question mark, or let us know via the Q&A box. You can also use the Q&A box to submit your questions to today's panelists. We'll be addressing select ones during the hour and also at the end of the hour, but you can send them in at any time. Please make sure you turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer as well so that you can use all of the widgets and bells and whistles on this console. And speaking of bells and whistles, please click on the Tips for Attendees widget below to learn what all of the widgets on this console do and how you can customize your experience today. Okay, with that, let's take it away, Deborah.
Thank you, Melissa. I'm honored to be here with you and Susan. And I'd like to take a moment to thank everyone who's joined us. I hope that your new year, and I got a slide ahead, sorry. I hope that your new year is starting off wonderfully. It's really so hard to believe that we're already a week into 2013. There's a fresh calendar in front of us, but it seems just like yesterday we were gearing up for Black Friday and all of the hoopla that surrounds it. Time moves much faster when you're juggling multiple channels in an effort to increase sales and profitability in a very highly competitive, continuously changing environment. Before you know it, our new calendars will be complete. So the question that you have to ask yourself is, where will your company be this time next year? Will you be celebrating your record growth and profitability, or will you be crying that it was just another tough year? My objective for this webinar is to share some trends with you, but more importantly, to inspire you to take the steps necessary to capitalize on this changing marketplace. Please feel free to ask any questions during the webinar or via email afterwards. Let's get started before the calendar is complete. The 5 trends we're discussing today are the cross-channel shopping experience, modeling customer behavior, automated marketing, using e-commerce data, and abandoned cart messages. We could spend hours, maybe even days, discussing each one of these trends and their merits and the effect they'll have on your business. But since we only have a short time together, let's focus on what you need to do to start capitalizing on these opportunities. Taking advantage of marketing trends requires specific actions designed to accomplish tangible results. I love this quote from Albert Einstein. He reportedly defined insanity as doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. It isn't very hard to find marketing campaigns that demonstrate this on a regular basis. It's even easier to find repetitive email campaigns because they work so well that people are hesitant to change them. It doesn't matter that making the changes will improve retention, loyalty, service, and engagement. It's very hard to look past the instant gratification of sending an email and banking the sales. The process is almost addictive. Before email marketing became a standard operating procedure for companies, I created a campaign just to test the waters. I had a client that had about 11,000 customers. So I took Microsoft Excel, Word, and Outlook, combined them with a mail merge, and sent a message out. It was just a very basic message offering a 15% discount. It was all text, but it was a heady experience. It was just amazing. We had these two computers set up. One was sending the email, and it was a very, very slow process. It took over 4 hours to send them all. But before we hit 500 on the send, the other computer was monitoring the website, and we were seeing orders come in. I mean, we were just so excited because the cost was just negligible, and the people were so responsive. Fast forward into today, things are very different. The tools are better. The people tend to be less responsive because competition is greater. I think we have less time. I think days are actually shrinking. People tell me there's still 24 hours in a day, but I seem to find only 20 in mine on a regular basis, and most everybody I know is doing the same. But even with these challenges, email remains a highly profitable, heady experience. And this makes it very hard to sell the idea of an email marketing makeover. Why would you invest resources in a channel that works when there's plenty of marketing areas that need fixing that aren't working? The answer is really simple. Increased sales, improved loyalty, and lower costs. The process for capitalizing on evolving trends begins with clear objectives and specific supporting goals. What exactly do you want to accomplish with every email and each campaign? While sales are expected with every email sent to customers and prospects, revenue should not always be the primary objective. There are other things that provide long-term benefits, such as increasing customer lifetime value, loyalty, and satisfaction. When you take that long view, the effect on customer behavior benefits the company more than the short-term sales. Now, people know this intuitively, but selling that idea to most executives, shareholders, or owners is close to impossible. They have fiscal responsibilities that take precedent. If you go in and you say, well, we're doing an email marketing makeover and we're not focusing on sales anymore, we're going to look at loyalty, they're probably going to run screaming from the room or send you that way. So if you want to implement an email marketing strategy that will take your company to the next level in sales and profitability, it has to be phased in, or you may be facing political suicide. To get around those politics, I mean, really, who has time for all of that drama? Plan a strategy that keeps revenue flowing while implementing a loyalty and service program. Campaigns designed to generate revenue are non-competitive with loyalty programs. In fact, they tend to complement each other. When you've worked your way around the politics and clearly defined what you want to accomplish, you get to the fun part. You know that part I'm talking about, that part that's addictive because it provides instant gratification. This is where you develop your creative campaigns, execute them, and measure the results. This is the stuff that makes email marketing fun. It's time for us to look at the individual trends now and how you can use them to grow your business. The email experience will be cross-channel in 2013. Ho-hum. You've heard this before. You're probably tired of hearing it. I get tired of hearing about cross-channel marketing, and I do it all the time. We've been talking about it for so many years, and nothing earth-shattering has happened. But this time is different. Mobile and tablet devices are changing the landscape. It's altering how people shop. People now expect that seamless shopping experience. You can't say to them, well, you know, this was the web and this is, no, you can't. It's got to be there because they want it across all channels and all devices. 2012 saw extensive growth in the use of mobile devices to access the internet. According to reports by Pew Research and Nielsen, approximately half of all American adults on smartphones. And apparently, all of them are using these phones to assist with their buying decisions. Some numbers that might get your attention are: more than 33 million U.S. consumers engage in shopping-related activities on their mobile phones. 47% of consumers have accessed customer reviews in-store using their mobile device. 41% of smartphone owners have made a purchase from their mobile phone. 53% of American consumers use smartphones to access search engines at least once a day. 31% of consumers research a product on their mobile device before buying it in store, while 40% of consumers research a product from their smartphones before purchasing it online. Mobile is here to stay. Tablets are positioned to surpass the growth of smartphones. People use tablets different from their smartphones. That's something you need to know, because right now the trend is, while in the past they've been using the smartphones to access reviews and do all these things, because tablets are gaining market share so much, smartphones are transitioning to be more for social, email, or the social and email dynamics, while tablets are more for the shopping experience. So you've got to be able to get somebody's attention on their smartphone, but be available on their tablet. 2013 is a three-screen year because people will be using smartphones, tablets, and computers to access and respond to their emails. It probably will be pretty equally distributed for businesses that are appealing to younger demographics or people that tend to be more techy. But you need to know your numbers specifically. According to research, Forrester Research, 78% of U.S. email users will also access emails via mobile by 2017. If you miss this trend, your competitors will leave you behind. To capitalize on it, you want to make it easy for people to cross channels. In a world where everybody's in a rush, easy trumps exceptional. The customer service board did a survey of 75,000 customers and found that before they ever called a call center for help, 96% went online looking for that help. They want it to be easy. The easier you make it for someone to complete a purchase, the more likely you'll get the sale. Furthermore, if it was easy, people remember easy. They're going to come back. Acquiring permission is more important now than ever because inboxes are so full, time so limited, and the threshold for getting that permission is high. People do not want to receive unsolicited messages, but they do want relevant and targeted offerings that provide solutions that make it easier, there's that word again, for them to live their life. They won't know that your email campaigns provide great benefits if you don't tell them. So many people have their sign-up forms that are, you know, subscribe to my newsletter here, subscribe to our promotions here, but they don't give reasons why. Giving a people a reason why they should do it always bumps the response. You want to use every channel, every screen available to acquire permission to send marketing and educational materials. Campaigns, promotions, and messaging also needs to be synchronized because you want that consistent branding and information across all channels. The objective is to have a seamless shopping experience where people can move from one channel or device to another without feeling lost or cheated. This is going to require internal integration between departments and very good communication. Don't expect it to happen overnight, but you've got to start putting this wheel in motion to make it happen. Customers are alienated when they respond to a promotional email on one channel and then discover they could have bought the item for less on another. Make all of your messages mobile and tablet friendly. Find the best way to do this by testing different layouts and different usage of graphics and text. It may be tempting to put smartphones and tablets in the same bucket. I hear a lot of people doing that. They say mobile globally, and that includes smartphones and the tablets because, well, they tend to be easy to take along, but some laptops are easy to take along, so that makes everything mobile. But the reality of it is you're looking at different screens. You've got different square inches to work with, and your real estate is very important, how you use that and how easy it is. For example, where I live in, when I'm in the city, we have 4G. But I don't live in the city. I live way out in the country on a farm, about 30 miles from the city. And the best I can do is 3G, and some days I don't even get that. So when I get an email on my smartphone and I open it, I see the subject line, and then I see all of these squares or rectangulars with the little X's for images. These are even with transactional emails these days. I don't know what's with that. Send me a text. Make it available so that I can read it. And, I mean, I know I'm not the only one. I have neighbors out here, too. It's critical that you know how people access and respond to your email. Are they reading it on their smartphone and then clicking on it on their tablet? Or are they opening it on their desktop? How are they accessing it? Because if you've seen a drop in your opens or click-throughs, it could possibly be due to the device instead of the message. You want to keep everything as simple as possible. The best practices that motivate people to act after reading an email work on every channel. A simple subject line that is great can motivate people to change devices if the rest of the email is challenging to read. So if you're not quite up to the level where you're able to go in and monitor and figure out exactly how to configure everything and all of that, just make sure that you are following the best practices. Providing detailed information on what to do next, preferably in text form, increases response rates, and keeps people moving toward conversion. The next trend we're going to look at is behavior modeling. Now, people often run out of the room when I start talking about behavior modeling because it really excites me. I'm an engineer in training, and my mind just kind of works that way. But you don't have to be a neuroscientist to spot behaviors that are affecting your revenue and the cost of doing business. People complete in a specific activity tend to follow a similar path. Comparing the paths of the people who buy with those who don't provides insight to the buying process and where you're losing people along the way. Simple changes to the information presented can redirect people from the no-sell path to conversion. When reviewing how people move from your emails to your web pages and throughout your site, watch for signs that indicate they're moving toward a purchase. Look for activities that precede specific actions. The objective is to find ways to motivate people who don't complete the sale to change their behavior. This is not intended to oversimplify behavioral modeling. Of course, using sophisticated analysis like Target and some of the big boys do will yield better results. But if your company's in a position to do that, by all means, take advantage of it. But if not, even the smallest company can use behavioral modeling if they have a customer database and access to the analytics. You can build something. Start small, build it from there, because even small tweaks can significantly improve your business. Knowing your customers is the first step in behavior modeling. This goes back to the shop that was on the corner where they knew everybody's name when they walked in and they knew their cousins and their dogs and their in-laws and their outlaws. Well, you need to know this about your customer. Obviously, you're not going to get down to that small town level, but you've got to go beyond basic demographics and RFM modeling to look at how different customer types make buying decisions. When people make their first purchase, you have no way of knowing what they're going to do next. You can have an idea. You can look at their source. You can look at what they purchased, the category. You can look at the demographics, but you do not know if they'll become a hit-and-run shopper or a platinum customer. Historical information is required to definitively identify the customer type. The more you know about typical behavior, the faster you can identify the customer type and tailor your marketing to match it. All of your customers have a life cycle. Some are very short, some are long, but they all have a life cycle. They vary in length, number of purchases, and lifetime value. The way the typical life cycle begins is with the first purchase. These I call newbies. And there's three possible paths for newbies to take. They become discount shoppers, hit-and-run shoppers, or active. It's important to identify the discount and hit-and-run customers as quickly as possible so you're not investing additional marketing resources in people unlikely to make future purchases. These customers can sometimes be redirected to the active path, but you have to have very targeted campaigns to do so. Email is perfect for this. At any point in the customer's life cycle, they can jump to the final stage, which is they're dead, resting in peace. The optimal life cycle begins with newbies becoming active customers that transition to rising stars and then platinum buyers. As the life cycle nears its end, the platinum customers become fallen stars until they rest in peace. Once you understand your customer's life cycles, you can create email marketing campaigns that encourage positive behavior and redirect paths before people cycle out of the buying funnel. The segmentation for your email marketing campaigns is very different from that of your catalog and or direct mail programs. Email marketing is a perfect channel for managing the customer life cycle. You want to have segments for each behavior that you've identified so you can send triggered emails to keep people actively buying. Be careful that you don't over-segment your customer database for creating your email campaigns. It takes a lot of time and effort to create and maintain these campaigns. Over-segmentation uses more resources without significantly increasing the return. When appropriate, ask your customers how they preferred to be contacted. How often do they want you to email them? What type of emails do they want to see? The information they provide may give you additional insight to their behaviors, but I caution you that this information may not always be reliable. People tend to have rose-colored glasses when they look at themselves. They think they're not susceptible to the marketing tactics that actually work. To ensure accuracy, always test. You'll most likely find that customers respond even when they promise you they won't. Your objectives for behavior modeling are threefold: retention, loyalty, and conversion. Each campaign in your program should have one of these items as a top priority. If all of your campaigns, or even the overall majority, has conversion as the only priority, then you're sacrificing your long-term growth for short-term sales. Fix that problem as quickly as possible. The next trend we're going to look at is marketing becoming more automated. Marketing automation done well saves time while generating revenue and keeping customers coming back. The trick is doing it well. Set it and forget it marketing may work in another galaxy, but in this world, People expect much more. They want the companies they do business with to be responsive to their needs. It's impossible to be responsive when you are not actively monitoring and adapting your marketing. Automation works best when it serves customers' needs. If you use a ready, aim, fire approach, you'll be able to serve your customers and reduce marketing costs and effort. The ready stage is where you plan your strategy. Like before, you need objectives. Once you've identified your objectives and goals, define the triggers and business rules. Where are your opportunities to provide people with more information that will help them make better buying decisions? How often should they be emailed? How much time is between contacts? What information needs to be included? What do you want them to do next? How do you communicate this to them? As you go through the process of answering these questions, more questions will appear. Keep answering until you have your strategy planned. Only then will you be able to choose the best software solution. The software you choose needs to follow industry standards for best practices. It needs to be easy to use, and it must have the tools you need to implement your strategy, be economical, and the service provider needs to offer outstanding customer support. You want to spend your time creating campaigns and engaging customers instead of wrestling with software that doesn't work. Now it's time to aim. This is one of the parts that I like best because it's when you get to see all the pieces coming together. Using the information that you know from customer life cycle to automation opportunities, start creating your trigger campaigns. If you haven't used triggers before, start with the type most likely to deliver the best response. This is usually the area where you have the most volume. For example, if you have a strong acquisition program, work on your welcome campaign. If you're getting a lot of WISMOs, that's where is my order, calls, or emails, start with your transactional campaign. If you have challenges with people using your products or using them incorrectly, or call in to ask questions that you think they probably should know anyway, the answers to already, start with the educational campaign. Wherever you decide to start, work through each of the different types of triggers until you have a campaign for every one of them. It's now time to pull the trigger. Start sending the emails. Each one should be considered a test. You want to track everything and document it well so you will have benchmarks for comparison. Revise the emails as needed to keep your marketing program in a state of continuous improvement. Always use a reply address that works so you can respond to your customers. The easier you make it for them to communicate with you, the more likely they will let you know how you can better serve them. People are often afraid that they will be bombarded with emails by making it easy for customers and prospects to contact them. You don't need to be afraid of this. It really won't happen as long as you're following best practices. Marketing automation requires maintenance. Regular updates of everything from subject lines to content to segmentation are necessary to keep people opening your emails. P.F. Chang's provided a good example of what can happen when you start with the template, make some minor changes, and just keep sending emails. Now, this isn't a triggered campaign, but the example is relevant. I don't know how well you can see this. It's kind of small. And so it started October 10th, 2012. They sent an email with the subject line of get 20% off online takeout for the VP debate. On October 15th, they offered 20% off for the second presidential debate. On October 22nd, another 20% off for the final presidential debate. And on October 26th, you get the same offer for Halloween, followed by a last chance on October 31st. The first three offers were sent twice in a day. So people that read their emails every 5 minutes, delete the ones they're not interested in, they probably never would see this. But for the rest of the world, this is how it looks in an inbox sorted by sender. look at your emails in series to ensure that there's enough variety in the subject line that people will not think, well, they're just sending me the same old email all the time. And the subject lines need to be interesting enough to encourage people to open the emails even if they're not seen the day they arrived, even if they've expired. Because if you have an offer that's expired and somebody didn't see it when they're cleaning out their email box and they see it and they open it and they look at it, then they're going to go, oh, man, I missed that. I need to watch their emails more carefully. And that kind of moves you up in the top priority for them. In 2013, retailers will use data from their e-commerce platforms to create strategies that modify behavior, increase revenue, and improve loyalty. So how do you define big data? There's a lot of talk about it, a lot of hype going around. You envision, or at least I did, when everybody started talking about the big data, just all of these bytes and bits just flying all over the place. But instead of looking at the volume of data available, try looking at what you can do with it. It's very easy to get overwhelmed when you're surrounded by so much data. But much of the information has stored in all these databases has very little value at this time. Converting it into opportunities is cost prohibitive. Having said that, there remains extremely valuable information hidden in your files that needs to be mined and used to grow your business. When you do this, big things happen, and that's what big data is. It's data that you can use to grow your business and make it more profitable. It doesn't matter how much data you have or how much mining you do, unless you use it to improve service or increase sales and profitability. I've seen companies go in and just pull out a ton of research, mounds of reports that are generated every day, killing tons of trees. And the reports are distributed to all of the managers, but the information in them is never used. It's worthless. The data's worthless. It's just a cost center. There's no profitability because they're not applying the information to improve their business. To take advantage of the available data, start by identifying the sources and the availability. If your business is represented on several platforms, then you most likely have a lot of duplication. You're going to have customers, for example, a retailer that has a presence on eBay, a presence on Yahoo, and a presence on Amazon, in addition to their own website, are going to have customers that are in all of those platforms because people jump from one place to the other. It doesn't make a lot of sense, but that's what we do. We tend to jump around. You also have a high probability of having incompatible or corrupt data. Before you can use any of this information, it has to be scrubbed. It needs to be clean. And you need to be very hands-on with this cleansing process because as the information's filtered, you will start to find opportunities hidden in the mist, things that you don't even know to look for. Looking at raw data, you should literally take a day a month and go in and just look at raw data and see what you can discover. Create a master database that consolidates applicable data from all of your channels. Use that information to enhance the customer profiles, you know, the ones we worked on earlier in this presentation, so that you can provide more relevant marketing messages, because that's what this is all about. It's about knowing your customers well enough to send them the right message with the right offer at the right time. The information found in your e-commerce data can be used to improve every marketing channel, not just email, not just online. You want to segment your customers using RFM models and the online buying behavior. Identify the customers that respond to cross-sell and upsell suggestions. You're going to really like these people because they are the ones that are most likely to respond to promotional emails. Pull that information out and use it. Add all of the source information that's available to your database. This will help you see how your marketing is moving people to your e-commerce platforms. And finally, you want to look at the category seasonal purchases because you will have people that only buy certain categories. You will have people that only buy certain times of the year. I don't know if anybody's here from American Girl, but when my daughter was into American Girl dolls, I bought them twice a year. I bought them for Christmas and I bought them for her birthday. I received roughly 20 catalogs a year. I received emails every week, sometimes more than one, but I only purchased those two times a year. If they'd gone through their database and they'd done this analysis, they would have known I was a seasonal buyer, and they could have very closely targeted me. I even provided them, they knew, my daughter's birthday. So it would have been really nice if about a month before her birthday, I'd received an email that said, okay, your daughter has these 12 dolls, and we have these new outfits for them. Or here's a new doll to go with your family of bam, 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 and name the dolls. Because that's personal. It's personalized. You want to synchronize your messages across all of your channels so your customers are receiving this personal shopping experience. And we can do that now. I mean, that's really exciting. For those of us that started in direct marketing, well, back about the time dirt was invented, we didn't have this. Everything was done manually or with, you know, we had computers, but we just didn't have the ability to have all of this information. Let's take advantage of it now. And then wherever possible, you want to optimize your efficiency by using the automation tools. The final trend that we're looking at today is retailers getting on board with abandoned cart messages. In a study of 100 brands by Bronto, they found that 13% sent at least one post-abandonment email. This number's dismal. I mean, it's just dismal. Failing to remind shoppers that they have open cards is literally leaving money on the table if you want to look at it from the company's point of view. But if you want to look at it from the customer's point of view, you could be providing them an additional service. That goes back to let's make it easy for the customers. If you have an abandoned cart program, that's wonderful. But if not, let's get one started just as soon as possible. I mean, since you get off this call, get one started. Sorry, I was slide behind. Focusing on usability and triggers provides an abandoned cart double punch. People abandon carts for a variety of reasons. You may be asking for too much information, requiring them to go through too many steps, failing to establish trust, or providing a confusing process. Or it could be nothing you do. The world's completely filled with distractions that can redirect attention from completing the shopping cart to elsewhere. Bosses walk in while somebody's in the process of checking out. The baby starts crying. The person the gift is for pops in the door. All of these distractions are out there. So when you help people find by reminding them that they have this in the shopping cart, you might just save them for a birthday. To avoid abandoned carts or to reduce, you can't avoid them. You shouldn't avoid them because if you don't have abandoned carts, then what you're doing is you're not aggressively getting people to move into the checkout process, but that's for a whole new time. You want to make your checkout process as user-friendly and secure as possible. People want things easy. but they also want it to be trustworthy. Once you move someone into the checkout process, you want them to stay there. Allow customers to change their mind without ever having to leave the cart. They need to be able to change the quantities, remove items on the fly if you're offering, and you should be, upsell items or cross-sell items. They should be able to add it to the cart from the cart. When people leave carts without completing the order, save it for them until you have given them multiple opportunities to finish the process. Wait until they've received all of your abandoned cart messages and had time to respond before killing the cart. Here are some tips for your abandoned cart messaging. Keep the message friendly. Make sure you don't do anything that could be perceived as creepy. You and I know that people's online can be and is monitored. We know how people move from here to here to here. We can watch that. Providing specific details about someone's movements is really creepy. It's not going to encourage them to ever buy from you, or they probably won't even visit your site again. They may throw their computer out the door. Don't expect one reminder to do the job. People are busy. Even if they see the first reminder, they may forget to act on it. Test different messages, both the quantity and the content, to see what works best. Offer incentives, but don't do it every time. People are trained easily. I mean, it's just, and if you are sending an abandoned cart promotion discount with every abandoned cart message, then people are going to, your abandonment's going to go up because people are going to abandon the carts, wait for the message, get the discount, and wahoo, they've saved some money. Randomly sending promotional reminders will bump up the conversion rates without negatively training people. Test everything and continue doing so because people's behavior changes over time. The more you test and improve, the better your results will be. Let 2013 be the year that you find the right balance between effort, cost, and risk to maximize the return from your email marketing strategy. I'd like to thank you for your time. I hope I've inspired you to make the changes you need to take your marketing to the next level. I'd love to hear from you about what you're doing, so feel free to email me at any time.
Great. Thank you so much, Deborah. That was a great overview, and you went through, you know, exactly the points that we discussed, so that was very, very great. I'd like to – oh, actually, we do have a question before I move on to Susan. Oh, looks like it was answered. Okay. Well, next we have Susan Wall, the VP of Marketing for Bronto, and she's going to be talking about some more email marketing trends, specifically segmentation. And let's take it away, and how to drive conversions and revenue. So let's take it away, Susan.
Well, thank you so much, Melissa, and thank you, Deborah, for such a real-world approach. Usually when, you know, you get these trends, people are going to talk about trends, it tends to be much more conceptual, and Deborah brought it right down to earth for us. So how to put this into practice, and what should we do? And that's really what we want to focus on. I'm not going to take up too much time. We've already heard a lot of great ideas. All I want to do is point you to Bronto, because we have additional resources that you can really use. One of the things that we try to do is help you drive conversions and drive revenue. So that is our focus. That's what we live with day in and day out. So we're really concerned with how to do these things that Deborah's talking about and put them into action for you and for our customers. That's why we like having these kinds of approaches. Talked about, you know, and sponsoring a speaker such as Deborah. So what we do is we offer you some additional resources that you can go to. So, for example, the first one here is about revenue opportunities. And Deborah spoke to understanding the customer life cycle, and that is so important. And she spoke specifically about some of the approaches you can take. Well, if you want a little more information to add on to what she said, you can feel free to go to our resources page. It's bronto.com/resources, and there is a white paper there on uncovering the missed revenue opportunities, and there it identifies specific programs that you should be putting in place to generate more revenue in each phase of that customer's individual life cycle. Another white paper that we're offering that can help you, and again speaks to the things that Deborah talked about, is this one called Define, Benchmark, Evaluate. One of the things, she talked so importantly about how we have to track what we're doing and keep on top of it and constantly innovate, constantly test so that we know what's working and what's not working and whether something that once worked is no longer working. So we offer you some specific guidelines there that can help you implement exactly what Deborah was talking about in that white paper and really find what are the key factors that are going to influence your metrics. A third one that's important to so many people is really about how to use a commerce-centric approach. Since what you're really trying to do is drive more revenue, how do you do that? How do you do it with less effort? Using the triggers, using the automation that Deborah talked about, how can you leverage the other parts of the e-commerce ecosystem so that you can ensure that you're maximizing what you're doing? And so a lot of it is having the tools there that can help you figure out how to do that. So again, here's another white paper that you might be interested in, and it tells you a little bit more about email marketing platform and what we can do. So really the point here is one final point here is that we also offer a newsletter. If you want to just keep in touch and find out what's our latest white paper that we're offering, you can sign up for our newsletter. It's called Tips and Tricks. Again, feel free to go to bronto.com/resources, and you can sign up there when you download any of these white papers or even the white paper on abandoned shopping cart that Deborah mentioned in her research. So, again, thank you so much for allowing us to sponsor this, and then I'm going to toss it back to Melissa, and I suspect we have some questions to answer.
Yep, great. Thank you so much, Susan. Sounds like you have a lot of great resources out there for people, so that's good to know. Okay, we do have a question, but I want to remind everybody online, we still have a bunch of people online. Please send your questions because Deborah's here and she's ready to take them. So she actually really enjoys questions. So please send anything that's kind of the top of mind or anything, any sort of email problems that you're thinking about that are nagging you right now. So anyway, this question we got is a classic question, and I'm very interested to hear how you're going to answer this, Deborah. But in your opinion, is there a best day and time for sending emails?
Oh, wouldn't it be nice just to have a magic moment in time that you send your email every Tuesday at 11:05 and you get great responses? It's not like that, but yes, there is a best day and time for sending emails. If you're sending, it depends on the company, it depends on the products, depends on the demographics of the customers and the prospects, and there's a lot of variables that are in that. But typically, Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays tend to perform better than Mondays and Fridays. Weekends can perform very well, especially in inclement weather. Not when you're in the middle of a Sandy, of course, but there's snow or ice across the country sending an email out. Your customers are most likely sitting there poking on their computer. The way that you determine the best day for your company is you can test it. You can do A-B split tests to see which you're getting the best response rate, but even without doing the test, you can go into your software solution and look at when people are opening their emails. If you have, 10% of your emails are opened, I don't mean 10% of all sent, but 10% of the opens are open the day that it goes out, but then you see that 8% is open the next day, then what that tells you is the second day might possibly, it's certainly worth a test, it might possibly be a better day to send because your email's going to get pushed down. But especially for people who are marketing to individuals that are not on the computer checking their emails every day, that's really important to try to identify what's the best day, because if they're only checking their emails every 3 days and they're getting 100 emails a day, and I have no idea if that's real because I get between 800 and 1,000 emails a day, but if they get 100 emails a day and your email was there first, then you're going to be pushed way down to the bottom.
Great. Okay. We got a lot of questions as you were answering that, so I'm going to try to go through these. And I also believe, Deborah, that you'd be happy to answer some of these questions if we don't get to all of them offline. Is that correct?
Absolutely. I will answer any question that is asked.
Okay. we get this question kind of a lot because we do have a large B2B audience as well as a B2C audience. So, is all of your points, are they applicable to selling services as well as opposed to a product, or are there any subtleties there that you want to mention?
Well, services is a little different, but most of the best practices are universal. Services differ in that in most cases you're going to be acquiring leads as opposed to customers. You're looking for that solid qualified lead that your sales team can go and do the promotions to as opposed to that initial small order that breaks the barrier.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. We got a few questions about abandoned emails. In your opinion, is it better to have abandoned cart emails in HTML versus plain text? Would HTML emails get better response, or maybe it would be less likely for them to be open because they have to go through spam filters? I'm not sure. But what's your take there?
Well, it depends on how people are accessing your emails. Some people have their emails set up so they never get HTML, no matter how they're accessing it, because they don't want the viruses and all the ugly stuff that comes for it. Most software solutions provide both versions, and then they target that's the whole marketing automation thing. You don't have to worry about it. You just set up both and let your software provider handle how it's distributed. But I do recommend sending text only emails on a scheduled basis, because it's different when you go in and you look. I have preview set up on my Outlook. That's what I use. And so when I'm going through and I'm just kind of scrolling through looking at emails and I see all of these boxes that don't have images in them, and then all of a sudden I hit one that is all text, automatically think that it's from someone that is sending me a personal email. Text emails can be very effective. So test both and see which works best in the abandonment, but incorporate text and HTML in all of your email campaigns.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I've heard that as well. Several questions have come in on big data. Can you offer any methods to recommend for getting big data? So how do you go about getting the big data? I mean, that's a big question, I know, but are there any sort of general things you can mention around that?
Start at home. This is one of these things, you see on TV where they say, don't try this at home. Try this at home. Start your big data analysis with the information that you have access to. Information from your e-commerce platforms, from your email service provider, from your order management system. If you are a retailer, then the very first place that I would start would be my order management system, because these are the people that are buying from you. These are the people that you want everybody in the world to copy. So what are they doing? What information is in there that you are not using to make your marketing better?
Great. Actually, this is kind of an interesting question. I'm sure you're aware that Canada will have new legislation soon coming into effect that will make it illegal to send abandoned cart follow-up messages, I guess except where the person has subscribed to email marketing. Do you have any alternatives to market to these people?
Well, if you're not allowed to send the abandoned cart messaging, you can still send them a message promoting the items that were in the cart without mentioning the cart. So that's going to trigger in their mind, oh, yeah, I was looking at that. It's subtle, and it's not in violation of the law.
Right. That's interesting. That's interesting. I'd love to follow up on that. I'll contact the person who asked the question, because I'd love to get more information on that. Okay. Let's see. One listener wanted to know about changing the look or design of websites and emails. This is kind of a general question, I guess, but is there sort of a best practice there? Should you not change your site and your emails regularly because, you know, it might affect branding, or I don't know, is there like a general rule around that, 4 times a year or something like that?
There's not a rule of thumb on timing, but you do need to change things up. When emails are coming in and they look, you're using a template and they're the same except for the offer, people become immune to your marketing, and you don't want them to be immune or nonchalant about your marketing. What you want to do is you want to have something, a header or something that makes it clearly identifiable that it's coming from you, so you're maintaining your brand, but you want it to be interesting. You want it to feel like your brand but look different, if that makes sense. Sort of like the Target commercials. I love how Target does their marketing on TV, because you see a commercial, and before you ever see that big Target, you know it's a Target commercial just by the way that they're presenting it, even though it's very different, it's very interesting. So that's your ultimate goal, is to maintain the feel of your brand, but change the look enough to make it interesting.
Mm-hmm. Great. I think we have time for about one more question. I thought this would be a great way to end it. Can you bullet point 3 things email marketers must keep in mind for 2013.
Well, the first thing I would keep in mind is that email is a one-to-one marketing tool. It should be a two-way communication, and it should be designed to benefit the customer, because when the customer benefits, you will. The second thing is that it's a three-screen world that we're living in, and there's lots of different resolutions even within those screens. So your email has to be very readable. For example, if you open an email on a smartphone, and to make the text large enough to read, you have to scroll to the right and the left, back and forth and back and forth. It's not going to be read. So you've got to use the tools that's available to maximize your real estate on those screens. And the final thing is just do it. I mean, people are not sending as many emails as they can send without compromising their program. You can send more emails than you think. You need to be using the triggers. You need to use the tools that are available to you. And I know it's hard because you're fighting fires. You're over there with social. I do a lot of stuff with social, and social is so labor intensive, and it just wears you out. So you're over there and you're fighting these fires with social and email. Your email strategy is over there and it's going well and it's putting money in the bank and you don't have to worry about it. But the problem is, by not worrying about it, then you're not putting as much money in the bank and you're not building that loyalty. So that's what you really, really want to focus on.
Great. Well, I think that's all we have time for. So on behalf of Bronto and Retail Online Integration, I want to thank you all for attending today's webinar and for sticking around and asking so many great questions. And I also, of course, would like to thank Deborah Ellis for a great presentation. Be sure to check out ROI's webinar page to get information on all of our archives and upcoming events. With that, I hope to see you all at the next Retail Online Integration webinar. Bye-bye.